Right, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all very much for coming today. I'm Christopher Slaughter on behalf of the FCC. It's a pleasure to have you all here for Larry Lipscher's lunch. Just a couple of housekeeping notices. If you've got phones, sorry, of course, if you have phones, please set them to vibrate or turn them off. That would be great. Larry's already turned his off. Mine's off. Tom, is yours off? Okay, right. So we're leading by example. Has everybody got their reservations for Thaksin Shinawatra? Not yet. Okay. Please be patient with us. Every time this happens and one of these things sells out within 15 minutes, the office just gets slammed with all kinds of criticism and complaints about people who couldn't get seats. But that's the next big lunch, and that's on Monday. If you can't come, if you didn't get seats, there's no reason why you can't see the speech, which is the main thing. I think we're going to be broadcasting it on the TV screen, so please do come, and you know, you can attend, but maybe just not sit at the table and have lunch. Coming up, we have the Literary Festival, which starts on Tuesday the 10th with Mohammed Hanif. That is also fully booked, and I guess we're just bragging that we've got another literary event that's fully scheduled. We have Jonathan Fenby, who is also coming at breakfast on the 13th of March, which is a Friday, and he may be well known to many of you as the former editor of the South China Morning Post, who's also an author who's published a number of books. And then we've got Chiu Siate talking about writing in English on the 16th as part of the Literary Festival. And then the final one, the next one coming up is the 17th, the Tuesday, 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day, Accounting Scandals and Detecting Financial Irregularities. Yes, so that's Thomas Robinson, the managing director of the CFA Institutes. Sounds like a scintillating topic. Right, so that's that. Right, I'm very happy to be here to introduce Larry Lipscher because Larry Lipscher saved my life. I'm not embarrassed to admit it. I'm here to testify, exactly. It was 1995. I don't think I had filed U.S. taxes in probably 6 years when someone said, you need to meet my friend Larry. In fact, it was Bruce Grill who said, you need to meet my friend Larry. And I said, your friend Larry? And he said, yes, Larry will take care of everything. And Larry has taken care of everything, and I'm happy to say every year he has taken care of everything. I pay him on time, more or less, and have kept Uncle Sam off my back ever since. It was an alarming realization when I went to get my passport renewed, and the sign said, when we renew passports, we also tell the IRS where you are. That was the wake-up call. It was like, oh, yeah, it works out fine. So I called Larry immediately afterwards. I think a number of you are also clients because word was that Larry would be making mistakes on your tax return if you didn't attend the luncheon today. He says he has no idea how that rumor got started, but I happen to know that he told it to me about 6 weeks ago. So there you go. Larry's also the author of the book, The Analects of, what is it? Okay, you saw the books on the way in. We happen to know... I was going to make the pitch for him, but I guess it's unnecessary. I happen to know that the ink is still wet on them, so be very careful. Larry was correcting drafts on the 13th of February, we understand. A hell of a way to bring in Valentine's Day, Catherine, but that was the rule. They had to be done by then. So the books are here. The books are hot off the press. Please pick them up. He will be happy to sign them. He's a man who probably needs no introduction, but just in case he does... Larry is also the first non-Chinese CPA to be accredited in the People's Republic of China, and he got that distinction about 15 years ago, hung up his shingle, and then took it down again, I think as of the end of last year, right? He lives in Guangzhou. He's commuted back and forth between there and Guangzhou for many years, or between here and Guangzhou for many years. He's got clients all over the world. He has been used by the IRS as a foreign tax jurisdiction expert in how many territories would that be? Four, five, six?
They only ask me for three.
Okay, there we go. Three.
Asia,
three.
And
there we go. So he'll be able to speak into the microphone in just a minute. I should stop asking him questions. But the other part of Larry's great story, and of which there are so many, but the one that I've always been fondest of is the time when Larry was the U.S. business manager for Pink Floyd and the Moody Blues, which I think you'll all agree makes him in perfect preparation for dealing with the tax scenarios of the People's Republic of China and for most of the expats that you encounter around there. Anyway, all of that, the stories could go on for days, but all of that is just an introduction to Larry Lipshear, my friend and my accountant.
Okay, first, before anything else, Chris, you're going to the toxin speech, right? Okay, I won't be there. I'm going to be out of town. Can I ask you, if you get the chance, to ask him if he paid capital gains tax on the sale of the Manchester City football team? Okay. Good afternoon. I'm going to start today's talk by asking the following questions, for which I promise you I'll either answer them all before this speech concludes, or I'm going to put you to sleep. Because remember, tax matters are the world's most boring of boring topics. Anyhow, let's begin with the questions. Firstly, what does a kangaroo fart have to do with taxation in India and China? What does taxation in China have to do with the brand spanking new Economic Stimulus Act that President Obama signed into law on Tuesday, the 17th of February? What impact does the Obama Stimulus Act, or for that matter, any of the seven other acts that Congress passed and that Bush the Younger signed into law between December 2007 and 23 December 2008, what do they have to do for the American expat or the non-American who is stuck with having to file tax returns in the United States? What else should the U.S. tax filer know about U.S. tax obligations? What should the American expat look forward to in the future tax-wise? What do I think of the economic stimulus acts that some of our neighbors in Asia have currently been passing? Well, to begin with, for the past 5 years, I've been writing about all of this, about taxation and the economies of nine jurisdictions: China, Hong Kong, Macau, Taiwan, Korea, Singapore, Thailand, Vietnam, twice monthly for tax analysts of Washington, D.C. And much of what I've learned working directly with the tax jurisdictions, with the tax bureaucracies in each jurisdiction, is included in a book I've got out there, The Tax Analects of Li Fei Lao. It's very conveniently located here, and I brought pen rollerball refills in case my pen runs out, so I'll autograph as you want. But remember, buy the book. Okay, that's a... Of course it is. Of course it is. First, I want to offer a word of caution about the Tax Act that was recently signed. No one for sure really knows what's in that law. It all started out with an $833 billion U.S. package of 800 pages that the U.S. House of Representatives signed and passed. Along the way, it went to the Senate, and they reduced that amount to $820 billion. But they used their own writings, equal in size to what the House produced. But then it went to the Joint House-Senate Conference Committee. And what they came out with was a 1,400-page enactment that totaled $787 billion. Now, do you honestly believe that in the 2 days that the House and Congress had to scrutinize this bill, that any of the 535 members of the House or Senate actually read the bill? I'll wager that they did not, that nobody did read it. And I'll tell you something. By offering to wager this, I'm committing a crime in Hong Kong, because exclusive wagering rests with the Hong Kong Jockey Club, and this is an illegal bet. Okay, the next to the last tax act that was passed under Bush, the Hank Paulson 600-plus page bailout, took a month and a half for the AICPA to actually analyze. The American Institute of Certified Public Accountants came out on January 21st, 2009, with their own analysis of the December 10th Paulson bill. This means that there's another bill, the 23 December Pension Act that Congress passed and Bush signed, that we're still waiting for an analysis of. So Lord knows when we'll get the full 1,400-page analysis. A word about Timothy Geithner, the new Secretary of the Treasury. He's an economic wunderkinder. He has a tripartite support, Wall Street, the Republicans, and the Democrats. He was the first of the group of cabinet secretaries that was approved by the Senate. He previously worked for the International Monetary Fund. Now, let's be frank. I've represented green card holders who worked for the IMF. I saw the same instructions that Geithner saw, that the IMF gave its employees vis-a-vis their U.S. tax filing obligations. I'm acquainted with a seminar that Geithner went to, where they explained to him very explicitly that he was getting an extra stipend, a grossing up of his income so he could include Social Security tax payments with his tax return. Geithner tried to get away with not paying. He got caught for 2003 and 2004 in an IRS audit, and he paid the tax and the penalties for erroneous misfiling. He clearly got away with 2001 and 2002 and only paid this tax obligation after the due diligence team Obama had put together suggested that he do so in order to pass the Senate confirmation. On the other hand, Tom Daschle, an ethical, honest, honorable person who I know personally, was a victim of partisan politics. He never made it through as health secretary solely because of partisanship. I consider Daschle to be innocent, and I consider Geithner to be as guilty as a $3 bill, or for that matter, any 100 renminbi note that's coming out of China these days. But don't get me wrong. I want Tim Geithner as Secretary of the Treasury. I want Tim Geithner as head of the IRS. If Geithner's successful at resolving the economic dung pile we seem to be in right now, then hopefully he'll tackle the Kafkaesque bureaucratic nightmare that the IRS has become. I'd far prefer someone who, like many of us here today, would be content to screw the IRS as head of that body. Who knows? Maybe Geithner, with a little bit of subversion from within, will be just the right ingredient at making the IRS a little bit more user-friendly. Okay, let's get to the new laws of 2008 and 2009 that'll impact U.S. income tax return filing this coming year. Let's entitle this, All You Currently Need to Know About U.S. Tax Law Changes and Are Willing to Pay for the Cost of an FCC Lunch and Let Me Spoon Feed You. Number one, first and foremost, if you die in 2009, or if someone you know close to you dies, this year the estate tax exemption increases from $2 million to $3.5 million. This is by far the most important tax change. This effectively means if you have, or if somebody has, a $3.5 million estate, there's a $700,000 savings right off the bat this year. But unless this portion of the Bush First Tax Act, unless this portion is kept intact, and it doesn't appear to look like that, then going one day into 2010, and that estate is out, $700,000. Euthanasia towards the end of 2009 just might be fashionable. The capital gains exclusion on the sale of a principal residence is now limited. For the first time, beginning January 1, 2009, the up to $500,000 exclusion of gain on the sale of your principal residence will be limited by non-qualified use of that residence. Generally, non-qualified use means holding the property as a vacation home or as a rental prior to its conversion into a principal residence. If you, the expat, own a dwelling back in the States and you're planning to sell that dwelling in the not-too-distant future, then you'd best acquaint yourself with the provisions of this new method of treatment for capital gains, because otherwise it might cost you a pretty penny or a pretty dollar or pretty tens of thousands of dollars. Brokers have been given an extra 2 weeks to prepare and distribute the brokerage account 1099s, the information necessary for you to fill out your tax return if you had stock sales or dividend income that has to be reported. Up until this year, brokers had until January 31st in which to distribute the 1099s. And oh boy, did they distribute them. Wrong. All wrong. Then they corrected that late in April, late in March, or early in May with a corrected 1099. Nobody wants to be penalized, so the brokers especially sent things out that knowingly was wrong, and now they have an extra 2 weeks till February 15th. And you know something? Those 1099s that some of you are receiving right now, discount them. They're still all wrong. You're going to get corrected 1099s from your brokerage houses, if those brokerage houses are still in existence at the end of March. Okay, let me speed up my teleprompter. Beginning January 1, 2009, the failure to file a timely tax return is going to be challenged by the IRS this year. It's going to result in a penalty of $135 and will apply even if you've got a refund coming. Up until last year, that penalty was $100, but you know something? It was rarely, if ever, enforced. Now the IRS claims they're going to enforce it. Will they? Your guess is as good as mine. One of the tax acts last year was simply known as the Tax Extenders Act of 2008. If you fell into the alternative minimum tax trap and had AMT taxes last year, you might be lucky. You might be one of 18.4 million Americans who, because the AMT exemption increases to $69,950 for joint filers and $46,200 for single taxpayers, that AMT patch is expected to cost $60 billion to the IRS. So if you take $60 billion off of $787, the economic package is really $727 billion. Will there ever be life without an AMT? I doubt it. After all, how can Congress change something that it simply does not and will not ever have the ability to understand? The biggest of the tax credits coming out this year is estimated to be costing the government $135 billion. There will be for 2009 and 2010, so don't let this be misleading. It's actually $135 billion cut in two for each year. There will be a $400 tax credit per worker or $800 per working couple. But the full amount of this credit, which can only be offset against your tax liability, ceases at a modified adjusted gross income of $75,000 if you're single, or $150,000 if you're married filing jointly. Since modified adjusted gross income adds back your foreign earned income exclusion, the likelihood of there being many expats who'll be able to take advantage of this credit is quite small, especially since that drop-off after $150,000 is real brutally fast. Yet, $10,000 can make a world of a difference. Let's say you got a kid in college. Did you know that you can deduct up to $2,500 this year in educational credits if married filing jointly, your modified adjusted gross income is $160,000 or below. And the drop-off after $160,000 is far less drastic than the workers' tax credit. For the past two decades, Americans with foreign bank accounts or brokerage accounts have been required to file an annual form, TDF 90.22-1, listing account information and filing that form by June 30th of the subsequent year. To my knowledge, no one has ever been penalized for not filing, and frankly, I sincerely doubt if the Department of the Treasury in Detroit, Michigan, where these returns are filed, knows what to do with all this paper they're receiving. This year, the IRS claims it will start enforcing penalties against non-filers. I'm skeptical, but nonetheless suggest if you have not been filing this form in the past and you've been living overseas for a while, it really behooves you to consider filing this form, at least including one foreign account, just to cover your rear end. The foreign earned income exclusion goes up this year to $87,600. Add to that $87,600 your standard deduction and your exemption, and you're looking at an amount that's quite close to $100,000. Now, effectively, there are very few correspondents and journalists who are earning under over $100,000. So, I know for sure. So, effectively, if your income is under $100,000 and you're in a starvation business, you still got to file the tax return, but you're going to be tax-free. And the last item, the very last item that might have impact upon you, bicycle commuters will now receive a tax-free fringe benefit. Beginning this year, you can have a $20 per month credit to offset the cost of purchasing and maintaining your bicycle. Now, let's face it. If you live in mid-levels and you work in Central, you can kill yourself twice. One, going downhill and the brakes fail. Secondly, the end of the day, after a hard day at work, you're going to get a coronary trying to go up the hill. That's it. If you have no holdings in the United States, if all of your income is generated from outside of the U.S., then those 10 items that I mentioned are the only items that are applicable to you in the entire stimulus package, in the entire seven other laws enacted by Congress last year. What happens now is anyone's guess. Personally, I think we're in a financial influenza of pandemic proportions. Pandemics, frankly, do not disappear fast. I hope, you hope, that what the U.S. is trying to put into effect works. Will it? I don't know. We can only hope, but we have to wait and see. So what do I foresee in the immediate future for the U.S. expat tax filer? Well, firstly, with the exception of that $3.5 million estate exemption, which is the only thing I think that Congress will retain, I think all the other Bush First Tax Act provisions will be sunset clause wiped out. What I think we have to be wary of is the fact that we previously had a Republican, Chuck Grassley of Iowa. His replacement as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee and as chairman of the Joint House-Senate Conference Committee is Max Baucus of Montana, who thinks exactly as Grassley did, that the expat should not have a foreign earned income exclusion. We've got to be very careful about this, and it might take another intensive lobbying campaign of the U.S. expat. We are, in fact, the only large group of American citizenry without a constituency. We can neither turn somebody out of office or elect someone. Lastly, about U.S. taxes, do you own property in the United States? Do you file your U.S. tax return with the U.S. address, be wary about this in the future. The states are bankrupt, and they're starting to send out letters. They're grasping at anything they possibly can grasp at to try to charge taxes. That's not a good omen. Okay, what does China have to do with the Economic Stimulus Act? Two things come to mind. One of the broad outlines within the Economic Stimulus Act calls for the inception of a new public service investment fund, a fund that would buy up to $1 trillion U.S. dollars of the junk assets standing out as a very sore thumb on U.S. bank balance sheets. Japan is currently in its worst economic crisis since World War II. Thus, this time around, Japan ain't going to be a big buyer, and that makes China the most likely buyer of the new, improved U.S. junk bond. What will this mean for a somewhat cash-strapped China that has to rebuild an earthquake area the size and population of Germany, or cope with a drought that is the worst drought they've had in 50 years? Well, I think you're going to find enforcement of the Chinese individual income tax return for non-Chinese. In particular, people from Hong Kong and Taiwan are going to be targeted. A word to the wise, if you're liable for filing the Chinese individual income tax return, which is due and should be filed by March 31st, cover your rear end and file the darn thing. Okay? Second item, have you ever heard of a tax information exchange agreement? These are international cooperation agreements between tax bureaucracies of various countries. The PRC already has one with Hong Kong, and my gut feeling is that part of the deal in which China agrees to buy the new U.S. junk bonds will include a U.S.-PRC tax information exchange agreement. Okay, what about the other jurisdictions of Asia that I've been writing about? What about their attempts to stimulate their respective economies? Let's start with India. Why? Because it's the second most populous country in the world. What's happening there? Nothing. India is in the midst of campaigning for its national parliamentary elections. Elections start in April. They'll end towards the end of May. And the new parliament, the Lok Sabha, goes into session on the 1st of June. Over the past 2 years, fiscal irresponsibility has been the norm in India, as politicians promise everything to everyone and only worry about how to dig themselves out of their hole of promises if they actually manage to get elected. Ask me towards the end of June what I feel will be India's economic path, but don't ask me before because I sure as hell don't know. Korea. Of the 9 jurisdictions that I write about, Korea is in the worst position of any. Korea, as we all know, is an export-oriented economy and has the most rapidly aging population of any Asian jurisdiction, including Japan. There are some real long-term problems in Korea that no Korean politician is willing to talk about for fear of losing an election, if the truth be told. Taiwan, jurisdiction. Notice how good I've been about talking about jurisdiction, not about countries. If I called Taiwan a country and living in China, I'd be kicked out. Anyway, Taiwan doesn't manufacture anything as much as it owns companies in China that manufacture. Only the skies above Dongguan and Suzhou, the two commercial centers of Taiwan and China, are amazingly blue right now because the factories are shut down. How do you manufacture for export when all the importers of the world seem to have simultaneously disappeared? Vietnam is currently an economic disaster zone. The Vietnamese currency, the dong, was devalued by 3% last month, and I anticipate another devaluation soon. For a matter of astuteness, the biggest investors in Vietnam are Korea and Taiwan. This helps exacerbate their current problems as well. The pause that refreshes. The other jurisdictions that I write about? Well, my friends, you want to find out more? Buy the book. I'll be around, though, after the book signing to answer as many questions as many of you have all day long if need be. But take a look at, if you're an American, at the 1,600-word essay I wrote, All You Need to Know as a U.S. Expat About U.S. Taxation Living Overseas, and in a whole lot more words, read about all the other things I wrote about. Writing is an exercise in masochism, and I'm glad it's over, and I'm anxious to get back to do more. What can I say? Okay, let's talk about UBS Bank. If ever there was a stupid thing to do, it was what UBS did. You don't sell illegal, tax-evasive products in the United States to U.S. citizens. That bordered on sheer, pure, unadulterated stupidity. Now, UBS signed an agreement to release all the American holdings to the IRS. Do you think that'll happen? I don't. You think there'll be many of the 52,000 accounts mentioned and disclosed to the IRS? I don't. 200, 300, 400 at a maximum. Believe me, the Swiss government is not about to tarnish its brand image. They thrive on secrecy, which for that matter ain't so secret. You want secrecy in Europe? Go to Austria. They've got the best bank secrecy there. What does the future pretend? Go to Singapore. And now for a few words about marsupial flatulence. Cattle and sheep pass methane gas. This causes a problem, especially as kangaroos are just multiplying faster than you can count all the rabbits multiplying in this world. And what happens with kangaroos passing gas? It's methane free. In the right circumstances, with the proper economic stimuli and the right tax incentives, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if some young techies in the Haidian district of Beijing, in Hangzhou, in Bangalore, I'll never get used to Bengaluru, in Hyderabad, why some techies aren't sitting down talking about some wild, crazy, potentially money-making concept of a methane-less atmospheric replication of the kangaroo's stomach as a way to reduce greenhouse emissions. It'll only happen, though, if the right tax incentives are in place and some entrepreneurial nerd shows sufficient desire to come up with a concept that's been unheard of in the past but might just turn out to be this generation's Microsoft. It'll happen. Mark my words. Thank you. You've been a great audience. And now, if you have questions, I'm here. And now that that's over, I'll answer questions while drinking my wine.
Okay, so if I got that right, I was taking notes on your speech.
All wrong.
Die in 2009. Don't sell your house. Fire your broker. Do your taxes on time. Don't earn more than $75,000.
No, $87,600.
Oh, $87,600. Okay.
Plus your standard deduction. You're and, free under $100,000.
File that form and ride your bike. And that's basically the gist
Don't
of that whole speech.
Don't ride the bike. You'll get a coronary.
Kill your parents. Well, that's the die in 2009. If you can, kill your parents. Or die yourself in 2009. I think that sums it up. That's a nice view of the future. Looking at U.S. tax policy, then this is something we were talking about at the table. And Tom, I don't want to steal your question, so you know, feel free to follow up. But how much influence do we actually have in dealing with how we're taxed in the U.S.? I mean, it seems like I know that AmCham goes every year and has conversations with the people who will see them, but it doesn't really ever seem to affect the tax policy that is implemented as it affects, you know, expats overseas. You know, is there any real hope that lobbying Washington is going to make any difference?
In a word, no. In a word, no.
That just made it
that
beep.
Made it off.
That made it beep. That's even cooler. Okay, there you go.
Screw the mic. In a word, no.
Thank you. I was hoping for more than a word, though, Larry.
Okay. I don't hold much hope. The entire process is dominated by lobbyists, and as I said, If the House had an 800-page act, if the Senate had something similar, how does it come out to be 1,400 pages? Nobody's really read the whole thing in full now yet, and it's going to be very, very interesting when everything comes out.
So that's a very optimistic view as well. If anyone else has questions, of course, the rule is raise your hand, and we'll get it passed around. And I don't know, all of you jump up at once.
The you were the first.
Here, gentleman over here, first that you saw.
Has the inheritance tax changed from the original Bush bill where it was zero inheritance tax in 2010?
It's liable to be rescinded. I think the likelihood is that that 3.5 million exemption is going to stay, and that'll be it. Everything else from the Bush First Tax Act was likely to be wiped out.
Same question.
Well, actually, you talked about the education credit, $2,500.
Yeah.
But I think that's only good for if you send your kids to schools in the States. If they go in Hong Kong or outside the United States, it doesn't. There's no credit. Is that correct?
Let's put it this way. For university credit, it behooves you, the taxpayer, to put what you think is correct, and it behooves the IRS, if they're about to challenge you. I would take it and let them challenge you.
Oh, okay. Because last year's tax, I remember, it has to be an authorized university in the United States. Or don't you? You didn't see that.
I would still take it. I would rather take a chance, and if I'm not audited, proven wrong.
We had a lady all the way over here. Thanks, man. If you do have a question, just raise your hand. Useful also if you identify yourself. Obviously, you can tell us who you are now if you want to.
Jeff Galbraith.
Thanks, Jeff. I'll get to you in just a second. And another lady.
I'm Suzanne Dudek. I'm not American, thank God. But I'm.
No.
I'm an accountant, but I don't do U.S. tax. That's good. I like the easy stuff, like Hong Kong tax. I get asked all the time by American clients of mine. Does it pay if you have, if provided you trust your spouse? Yeah. Does it pay if you marry someone who is not American to make sure that your husband or your wife remain non-American so that you can push all the assets to that person?
I love my wife, who's sitting here dearly. In 1993, when it behooved us to get a U.S. passport because you were really restricted with a PRC passport for traveling, to get her an American passport. If I were to do the same thing today, I'd be hesitant. I agree with the concept of marrying, filing separately, and putting everything in your wife's name, because having lived through an equal division of property California divorce, I got all the liabilities, she got all the assets, and it didn't make a difference whether I filed jointly or separately.
Again, we're just filled with optimism today. So please.
Yeah, that kind of answered all the questions. So a new one is the this $87,000 plus the special deduction. Well, do you think that it sounds like that will remain? That's our new ceiling, so to speak?
For this year, this one is based on the cost of living, and it will go up. It might go up. It might actually go down. We don't know. We've lived in inflation for so long a period of time. We might be in a position of deflation. Never underestimate the power of the IRS to decrease something as well.
But what's in follow-up question is, what's the odds of Senate Finance Committee actually pushing through with this, removing the overseas income exemption?
I'd be worried.
You're a betting man. What are the odds?
I'd do better at the racetrack.
All right.
I couldn't tell you right now. Let's see what happens with everything else taking place right now.
All over the place. He'll be there quicker than you know.
I was quite surprised several years ago when I left the corporate job and went on and started a Hong Kong company, that my tax accountants, who are one of the big eights, said I needed to submit audited returns of my Hong Kong company with my U.S. individual taxes as well. Does that sound right?
No. You're not required by the Internal Revenue Service to submit audited reports. Basically, the larger the law firm, the larger the accounting firm that you are working with, the more they're concerned with malpractice insurance and lowering those costs.
Gentleman in the back. We've got a couple of minutes left, so I could probably take two or three more questions. Yeah.
Yeah, my wife is Chinese, and I'm an American citizen, and we're 3 months pregnant. So
congratulations. A round of applause now.
Should we be making a trip to Mauritius or somewhere? Where, you know, what's your advice as to where we should have the kid from a tax perspective?
You can still get your U.S. passport for your child. Our daughter was born in China. She's an American citizen. It doesn't make a difference. Except to your wife.
And the question over here.
If a 529 program, which was not authorized by the United States government, but in a foreign country, sends me money, do I have to declare that money?
That's between you and your good conscience.
God bless.
Okay. On that note, unless there are burning issues out there, buy a copy of the book, have Larry sign it, and he'll answer any questions you have over that. All that remains is for me to remind you that today is, in fact, Larry Lipshear Day, because he'll be making an appearance downstairs at Burt's tonight with his harmonica. So it's a Larry Fest 2009. The final gift, and thank you very much for joining us today, and thanks, Larry Lipshear.
I was there, man. You were. Thank you.
Okay, an FCC. Get a picture of us. 200. Yes, by the way, Larry says the book is deductible.
Requisite amount. Very nice. Thank you. Turn that. It's good. question was,
sister's a CPA in the States.